Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome to Guardians Weekly on the Cleveland Guardians Radio Network. Guardians Weekly is brought to you by Progressive, helping Guardians fans save hundreds on car insurance.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Guardians Weekly. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Good show lined up for you today. In the second half of our show, we will visit with one of the members of the Indians Baseball Operations Department who received a promotion this week as several promotions were announced, and the Indians have a new farm director. Rob Serfolio takes over as the Director of Player Development. He will oversee the minor league system as James Harris, who had been in that role for several seasons, has been promoted to an assistant general manager position. So congrats to James Harris, and we'll get the background on Rob Serfolio, an interesting path that he has taken to his current position, and he will oversee a farm system that has really come to the forefront and been such a key for the franchise for quite some time. So that's coming up in the second half of our show. But when we return and get started, we will visit with Dan Dickerson, radio voice, fine broadcaster for the Detroit Tigers, talk about his path to a major league broadcasting job with the Tigers for quite some time now that took him through the state of Ohio after being born and raised in Michigan just outside of Detroit. So some good stuff coming from Dan Dickerson after this timeout on the Cleveland Clinic Guardians Radio Network.
I'll tell you what, folks, strap yourselves in. We're going to be here a while.
Hi, I'm Flo from Progressive. Being a baseball fanatic like me can be stressful. It's not all sports points and touchdowns. So Progressive is going to help you take your mind off your team for a moment. Instead of thinking about how they missed that goal point score, think about the Name Your Price tool from Progressive letting you choose coverage options based on your budget. Unlike your team that missed the end zone net area. Well, anyway, hope this distraction about Progressive's Name Your Price tool was helpful. It sure kept me from thinking about all those penalty balls. Yay, sports!
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to Guardians Weekly. Jim Rosenhaus back with you, and we are joined now by the great play-by-play voice of the Detroit Tigers, Dan Dickerson, kind enough to join us. And we're going to talk some baseball with Dan and really kind of take a look at his career a little bit, some of the interesting things that he's been able to do. And before you say, now, wait a minute, here's a guy who was born and raised not too far outside of the city of Detroit, but some really, really strong Ohio ties. He has some family down in the Akron area. And Dan, you spent your college days just outside Columbus down at Ohio Wesleyan, and I imagine that was a, a real good time for you and a fun time for sure. Coming down to Ohio, which I know is persona non grata sometimes for Michiganders, but good for you coming to the great state of Ohio for college.
Hey, that drive down 23, I memorized it. I can tell you that down to Delaware, Ohio. I loved my 4 years in Delaware at Ohio Wesleyan. It was the perfect town for a small college. Just great time. But that's where I got hooked on radio. You know, that was the beauty of going to a small college, a 10-watt radio station. 10 watts. Is that even possible? Yes. And so if you showed up, you got an air shift. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. That's where I got hooked.
And how did the good folks at Ohio Wesleyan pull you out of the state of Michigan to come to school there?
I wanted to get out of state, you know, just get away from home. And you know, home life was fine. I had a great mom and dad. But I just wanted to get out of state and go to someplace new. I knew the big universities weren't for me. And so they said, all right, let's look around the Midwest. And I looked at some smaller ones out east and just kind of a small liberal arts school. And we toured all around Ohio, looked at Oberlin and looked at Ohio Wesleyan and Denison and all the small Division Threes, and looked at a few places in New York. I remember we went to Hobart, which was beautiful. And then I think Ohio Wesleyan was the only one I got into.
You know, that we appreciate the honesty, Dan. Getting that right in the forefront of our show today. So you mentioned they gave you an air shift on the station. What about games? When do you remember your very first game that you were able to do at the college level? I do.
It was a nobody was doing Ohio Wesleyan battling Bishop. I thought, well, this would be fun to try. And they're like, yeah, nobody's doing it. You can do a game. And so it was a bit about the technology. There weren't in the late 70s a lot of remote broadcasts. So it was probably my sophomore year, I'm sure it was, where so we had a phone line in the press box, but I was on a card table above the press box calling the game for WSLN radio. And I do remember, because, you know, the fun part about our jobs, right, you have to learn how to come up with a system. So I had no idea how to call a football game, so I I bought some hard, like, poster board, but it was thick, so I could cut out 22, probably 30 to 35 little squares for each team. And then I would like rotate them onto my board. Can you picture this? So I've got 11 little squares that I would move off to the side and then move onto the board. A player came into the game and had little bios on each little square. Horrible system. Horrible. Windy day, they'd blow all over the place. So don't ask me why I thought that was a good system, but hey, you have to learn. So I do remember calling those early games. I actually have surviving tapes, which are great for historical archive purposes, that I play for. I teach a little broadcast play-by-play class at Michigan State. I'll play those tapes for them just to say, okay, this is how it can start. And if you really work at it, it can get better.
And back then, of course, preparation-wise, and you said late 70s, nowadays we just jump online, go on the internet, and find everything we need. And I'm sure that came into play back then, didn't it? Pre-internet, what did you do?
I know. I don't even remember. There had to be game notes, but think how probably prehistoric those were. I mean, it was probably some stats, and I don't remember looking at anything. I mean, what did you do? Get them sent in the mail? I don't even remember. I don't remember if there were even game notes. There had to be something to look at. Rosters? Hey,
right? Yeah, there must have been a roster that they gave you.
Think about that, though. You couldn't just go online and look it up, obviously. So our sports info department, whatever it was called back then, probably had, you know, the latest mimeograph from Otterbein that you could look up. I had something. I remember being, you know, somewhat prepared. I think the game that I always remember is, so I would actually call the head coaches if I could get them and get them to the phone and try to take some notes. And I remember we played, I want to say it was Denison that had a single wing offense. I'm like, okay, it's a single wing. You know, sounds like an old style offense. Didn't bother to look up what it means and what it means for a play-by-play person to try to call a game with an offense that is built on misdirection and deception. I had no idea where the ball was most of the first half. I mean, you would hear the snap, and then you'd hear, because I got it wrong about six times in a row. Finally, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to lay out here on radio and wait to see where the actual ball is, because three guys have just now been tackled, and I have no idea who has the ball.
Did they have a good team that year?
They didn't have a good team for any year that I was. One year they started like 0-7. They've been outscored 152-7 or something. I mean, I didn't do all those games, but they were awful when I was there. But did I have fun? You bet. Basketball was actually pretty good. And they pulled the big upset of Wittenberg one year in the NCAA playoffs. And that was a lot of fun. That's where I really got hooked on play-by-play, was doing college basketball.
Dan Dickerson joining us, the fine play-by-play voice of the Tigers. And, Dan, you follow one of the best ever, Ernie Harwell. And I saw a note that the first time you had a chance to call an inning with the Tigers, you just happened to be stopping by the booth to visit Ernie, and he threw you on unprepared?
No. He did give me – so I'd never called baseball in the minor leagues. I had only done practice tapes down at Tiger Stadium. During the 90s, I got hired at WWJ, the all-news station, in 88. Early 90s, I wanted to try my baseball play-by-play because I'd never done it, and I love baseball. I wanted to see what it was like. So I would go down and practice, and then I remember calling Ernie at some point. I guess that, you know, I'd met him, but I didn't really know him. But I guess we all felt we knew Ernie Harwell, so those were the days where you could literally pick up the phone and call Ernie Harwell. And I asked him if he listened to my tape that I'd made it, you know, practicing at Tiger Stadium. He said, sure, why don't you come over to my house? So that began sort of a beautiful relationship. But, I mean, think about that. So I go to his house, and he listens to my tape, and, you know, little tidbits that I have, you know, socked away to this day, probably the biggest, you know, little things like the ball's not down low, it's low. It's one less word, but it's better, right? Every word matters. Little things like that, and keeping score in blue and red ink. Every base runner is in red, so you have to constantly review how we got to this point in the game, and you can quickly look back over your scorecard and see where all the base runners are bunched or not bunched. And that's something that I immediately adopted. But anyway, he was just so nice. And when I did my first Michigan broadcast, he wrote me a little one-sentence note, you know, heard your broadcast, thought it was terrific or something like that. So we form a friendship in the 90s. And then the last game at Tiger Stadium, as you can imagine, was a big deal. They're closing it down in 99. Comerica opens in 2000. I'm doing pre and post at that point on WJR. And my boss calls me in a few weeks before that game and says, hey, Jim Price, Ernie's partner then, my partner now, will be leaving the booth early to get ready for the post-game ceremony. Do you want to sit in with Ernie for the last 30 days? I'm like, yeah, sure. I don't know what I'm going to do, but yeah. Sure, I'll sit in the
There's only
spot.
One correct answer on that, isn't there?
I'm not a color analyst, but I can sure watch this game from the best vantage point in the whole ballpark. I always tell people, think about how close those booths were. If you look at the top of the screen behind home plate in most ballparks, that's where those booths were at Tiger Stadium. That's how close you were. So it turns out that I thought I was going to do an inning of play-by-play because Jim was going to leave an inning early, and then it turns out he wasn't. But I just stood in the booth. I was in the booth, which is, you know, tiny. But I'm standing next to the old engineer, Howard Stitzel, and listening to Jim and Ernie, because I don't want to repeat anything that they might have said when I go on the air. I still don't know what I'm doing. During Jim's inning, Ernie stands up, and, you know, he'd often wander out of the booth during Jim's innings, and there wasn't a lot of back and forth. That was kind of the style that he grew up with. So anyway, he stands up and talks to me and says, "So what's the plan here?"
He's asking you.
I'm like, yeah, I'm like, nobody's told Ernie that I'm going to be here. What? I mean, we're in the communication business. And sometimes we don't do a great job of that. So I said, well, I think I'm supposed to join you in the top of the seventh and stay out of your way till the end of the game. And he said, do you want to do an inning? I mean, think about this. This is an emotional big day for him, too. And it's an emotional day for everybody. And he's offering one of his last three innings at Tiger Stadium to me. And to this day, I get chills when I think about that. It's one of the most selfless acts for one person to another. I said, no, it's your last game at Tiger Stadium. He said, no, you want to do an inning? Well, I wasn't going to say no twice because I was ready. I thought I was going to do an inning. So he says, okay, here's the plan. I'll come back on top of the seventh, which is his normal. That was how they divided the innings. I'll come back on top of the seventh. I'll do the top of the seventh and then introduce you, and you'll do the bottom of the seventh and the top of the eighth. Last game at Tiger Stadium, and he's giving me a full inning. So, and like I said, the style was not generally a lot of byplay with Jim and his partner, whoever that might be. But with me, I was like, folks, you're listening to the Major League debut of Dan Dickinson. Dan, when was your first game here at Tiger Stadium? I mean, just put me at ease. I was feeling pretty good. But again, I'd never call baseball play-by-play live. But he put me at ease. We had a great time. And then I got to witness him, you know, top of the ninth innings, saying, you know, his goodbye to Tiger Stadium, and the top of the ninth, flash bulbs going off all around the stadium. Just an amazing scene. And that one inning, I don't think there's any question, helped me get the job the next year. I'd already expressed an interest in, you know, I think I told him, hey, I'm here anyway. If Ernie ever gets sick, I'm here. You know, he'd missed like three games in 60 years or something. So, the next year, that one inning helped get me into the booth as his middle innings guy. And that was amazing, an amazing thing.
Sometimes when you follow a legendary announcer, it's hard for that next guy. But because of the way he brought you in, did that soften that quite a bit for you?
Oh, no question, because I saw what happened when he had been let go in the early 90s, and they brought in two strangers. One was Rick Riz, who is a good friend to this day, the Seattle Mariners guy, radio and TV, and one of the great, nice guys in the game, and Bob Rathman. And they both came in from out of town, and they were strangers, and they had a different style. They had no chance. They had no chance. And Bob, as you know, Rick is a terrific announcer. So, but it was a different style. His style is very close to Dave Niehaus's style, I would say. Well, Dave Niehaus was Seattle's voice for so long. So the fact that I was Ernie's middle innings guy for 3 years, it wasn't a big leap, and it helped me tremendously. First of all, to have kind of, I think, his endorsement to get the job once he retired after the 02 season. But I was a familiar voice at that point in the Detroit market, having called Michigan football, Michigan basketball, and now Tigers baseball for 3 years. There was a lot of speculation. It wasn't a slam dunk. they dragged this thing out until, you know, he announced it in March that he was retiring, and they dragged it out till December before they hired me. But there's no question that familiarity helped. Being in the booth with him for 3 years helped tremendously.
Dan Dickerson, thanks so much for the time, and we'll catch up with you soon.
All right, Rosie, take care.
That's Dan Dickerson, the fine play-by-play voice of the Detroit Tigers. Stay tuned. More to come after this on the Cleveland Clinic Guardians Radio Network.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back to Guardians Weekly. Jim Rosenhaus along with you from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Great to have you with us. And as we mentioned in our show open, the Guardians organization announced earlier this week several promotions and changes of responsibilities in the baseball operations department. Most notably, from our standpoint this week, James Harris, who has been a good friend of the show, bringing us up to date on the Guardians minor league system on a regular basis in his former role as farm director for the franchise. He's been promoted to an assistant general manager's position. And taking over as the head of the minor league department is Rob Serfolio, now the director of player development for the Guardians. Rob joined the organization back in 2015 after graduating from Yale. He played baseball there. And he's previously filled roles with the franchise in both player development and amateur scouting. And he now takes over the day-to-day leadership of the minor league system. He's really had his hand in a lot of different things and has had that opportunity to learn the game from the ground up on the baseball operations side. And when we had a chance to catch up with Rob Serfolio earlier this week, he talked about just how excited he is to oversee the Guardians minor league system.
It is. It's really exciting for the staff and the players, and really excited to get rolling here hopefully soon. And just want to thank you, Rosie, for having me on, and looking forward to chatting with you.
And one of the things we've been able to do this offseason is really take some deep dives into the personalities and the paths that different people have within baseball and yours. I don't want to say there's a stock answer to how you get from point A to point B anymore, because it seems like there's so many different ways, and that's a really positive thing, I think, for any organization. And for you, we'll start at the end of your college career. You went to Yale and were a pitcher in the Ivy League. At the conclusion of that, you're able to join the Indians. How do you make that transition from Yale to professional baseball working in a front office?
That's a great question, and I'll lead off my answer with a little bit of dumb luck. I think there was, obviously a lot of people that I would have to give thanks along that path. And as you noted, I think there were certainly some obscurities to the way that I got to the path. You know, I studied medicine in school and got drafted really late as a junior and was hoping to have an opportunity to play at the end of my senior year and got hurt. And really in that gap between when I was rehabbing and when I was taking my MCAT as a pre-med student in college, I really had a lull of no job at the time right after graduation. And thankfully my college coach had reached out to me and thought that potentially looking into a career in baseball on the front office or, support coaching side of things might be something I'd be interested in. And luckily we had a couple former alumni that were able to kind of give me a little bit of information. And that's where the dumb luck rolls in, where I really just stumbled upon an opportunity that the Indians had as an internship, and was grateful to kind of trick them to bring me on in an intern capacity, and was fortunate to get a taste of a lot of different areas in baseball ops and support player development and the draft. And ultimately that was lucky enough for that to lead into a full-time opportunity afterwards. So, I think a lot of that is due to the group that we have here and learning from a lot of people that have moved on to big successful jobs like, Derek Falvey and Ross and Carter Hawkins. And obviously, learning from James the last couple of years as he's moved into the AGM role, I think it's just a huge credit to the group that we have here and how much emphasis they put on developing people and trying to do that, in the best way as possible. It makes it a lot easier when you have some great examples to learn from, like Chris, Mike, and the rest of the group that we have.
You mentioned all those names, and not being in the business, when you're looking around,
How much did that come into play? Maybe some knowledge that you learned from other people about the reputation that the Indians have on that front office side for really developing some talented front office people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was certainly a huge part of it. And I think especially when I had the opportunity to meet the group in the various interviews, and you know, one of the first people I met was Matt Forman on the phone, and just hearing about the ways that he thought about things and asked questions, and just felt like there was a lot of similarities in values. And I think the public perception obviously speaks for itself. And then being able to actually see that in person and feel the action behind that, about them really leaning into each staff member's development and how that just leads to different opportunities if you kind of put your head down and try and contribute to the team as best as you possibly can. And like I said, you know, I think just incredibly lucky to have gotten that first opportunity and then be in a really incredible environment where you're able to see how people behave and try and mold that and adapt their skills to yourself. And, you know, have been lucky enough to continue to be a part of that for the last several years. And, you know, I'm really excited to be able to move into this new role, to continue to try and do that with the group here in Cleveland, and then with our coaches and players on the ground.
You mentioned being a kid from down south. So many players who play for a college in the Northeast are from the Northeast, so they know what they're getting into weather-wise and things like that. You grew up in Alabama, and the pluses going to Yale are obvious academically and things like that. But for you, what did you have to overcome when it became a reality that you could go there, wrap your head around moving north, especially growing up down south?
I think I had never played a game below 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and that changed really quickly when our first spring practice on February 1st was about 6 degrees on a turf field with a 2-foot pile of snow behind it. So I think the first change was running to the nearest sporting goods store and loading up on cold weather gear. But that was certainly a transition, and luckily got used to that pretty quickly, as you know, we practiced outside all the way through the winter. But you know, that was is obviously an initial hurdle, and luckily as the spring goes on up in the Northeast, it's beautiful. And like I said, just you know, having my family kind of have Northeastern roots, I had a little bit of feel of what that might look and feel like. But certainly that transition was a lot different than what I was accustomed to playing in from a weather standpoint growing up.
Rob Serfolio joining us. He's the Guardians' new director of player development, and he started his career with the franchise back in 2015 as an intern. And Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff have both said when they first started, they became experts at the copy machine and things like that, you know, things that you wouldn't think would lead down the road to making trades and building a ball club and all that kind of good stuff. When you first entered the building, Progressive Field, and began working, what were some of the things that you needed to do just to get started and get your foot in the door?
Yeah, well, I'd like to first start off that answer that, unlike Chris and Mike, I probably don't have the adjective or descriptor of expert of anything, but certainly similar to those guys, spent some time around the copy machine or running to go get food for the group or setting up orders. You know, I think coming into a new team environment, like anything that I could do to provide value, whether if that was on the extreme margins, like early on to, you know, moving into some different responsibilities afterwards, but alluded to this earlier of just the group that we have here, and not only the quality of people, but just how smart and how much has gone into getting the right people in house and trying to establish the right culture from top to bottom. I think when you're in that and you feel that and you see it, it becomes really easy to try and adapt to that and mold your own personality and values and complement your weaknesses with your strengths to the group. And just couldn't have been more blessed to be around the people that I've been around here. And that's been, you know, just a huge treat. And I think been a massive aspect of my own development here, and credit to those guys that have helped build what this organization is now. And, you know, trying to do my little part to amplify that outwards, you know, now in our player development department, whether it's with our staff or players.
So what's been the most recent position that's really helped you get to this point where you can be the leader of the department and really put your stamp on things?
I'd say all of them.
Okay.
I think even thinking back to my first full-time position after an intern was really within the scouting domain. And at the time, you know, Brad Grant was the scouting director and Scott Barnsby, who's now leading the group, was the assistant scouting director. And Clint Longnecker, who I was working side by side, has certainly moved on to his own accomplishments as well. And for me, you know, just learning the ropes early in that role, especially with being able to aid in our process on what we're looking for in players, whether that's on field or off field, just gave me a tremendous background in the important values and characteristics that we want our players to have here. And again, that's both fundamental and just character wise, and being able to kind of then apply a lot of those to, okay, now we have the players, how are we working on top of that and hopefully helping them get from the lowest levels of the minor leagues to the major leagues has been incredibly helpful for that. And again, I think credit to our group, like the last couple of years in an assistant director role have had the opportunity to kind of, you know, take a shot at leading various things, whether it's off-season camps or, you know, certain systems and processes that we have during the course of the year. I think that's a huge credit to Carter and James for giving me those opportunities to experiment and figure out what that might look like if I ever made the transition. And I think that experience was invaluable in being able to just learn on the fly and make a ton of mistakes and that kind of being the expectation to make errors and learn from them. And I think we ask our players to do that all the time. And it's similar on the staff side of things of getting your hands dirty and trying to learn as much as you possibly can from what you've seen from others and then apply that in your own actions and just continue to get better each day. So I think huge credit to our group for kind of giving me more and more as I've gone along and like a real opportunity to kind of test and develop for a role that you're not actually in yet. So just am really appreciative to our group for kind of giving me those opportunities over the last couple of years.
And you mentioned getting a player from the day they are drafted, trying to get them to the major leagues and what that takes. Technology, processes, it seems like it changes in a heartbeat. Now, I can tell you my first job in baseball was with Kinston back when they were the Indians single A team in 1991. And after the game, the manager would just call into a voicemail. So-and-so went 2-for-4 and 3 of the 4 were hard hit and there was a ground out and the pitcher threw this many pitches and just left a voicemail of about 5 minutes with a summary of the game. And you rarely saw, occasionally you would see a roving instructor or you know, mental skills was not part of it. Strength and conditioning was just getting going a little bit. But again, that was right when Mark Shapiro, I think, was the farm director, and he was starting to turn things in a different direction. And now the Indians are very highly regarded with their farm system. How much have you seen it change, even in the years that you've been with the organization in terms of development and getting players to the major leagues and doing the best for them along the way?
Absolutely. I think you nailed it. It's the exponential growth has been pretty substantial. And I think that's a huge credit to our group. And like I said, having just great people around to help facilitate the work that we're doing with our players. I think some of the primary areas in which I've seen us continue to grow and adapt and change is the easy one is even 5-6 years ago, the amount of data and information that we had to kind of partner with a player and support that player on what it is they're working on the field has grown tremendously. I think you rewind the clock 5-10 years ago, like coaches oftentimes had to maybe guess a little bit more than what they do now, whereas we currently just have so much information and obviously everyone has that information, but how we actually use it is the competitive advantage, I think, for any team. And so having a staff and group of coaches that have been able to adapt and kind of mold what they've known for long periods of time that have made players successful and kind of solidify that even further with some of the information that we now have to our advantage to be able to help just bridge the gap and make things, you know, a little bit more scientific and structured because we can, which has been a massive advantage for any team out there that has really dug into the technology and the information. So I think that's a big one. I think the other big one that I think we're still learning and growing in this space, but it's been really fun to dig into over the last couple of years is just teaching and coaching principles and best practices and what that means for actually developing skills. So the space of skill acquisition and how a coach or, you know, a support staff can help a player really understand what it is we're trying to move the needle on, and then setting up the best environments for those skills to grow and develop quickest and most effectively. That's been really fun. And again, huge credit to our coaching group that have really drove a lot of the research and interest in that space. And it's been fun to kind of play a helping hand in a lot of the things that we've done to capitalize on that and look to put in place, whether it's the lowest level of the minor leagues all the way up to AAA. And I think, you know, maybe the third thing I'd throw out there is just how holistic that effort has become. And I think, you know, maybe 10 years ago, it was what everyone thinks of when they think of player development is, okay, well, what's that guy doing on the field? But there's so much more that goes to that, whether it's our support on the mental skills side of thing. And we've been lucky enough to bring in some incredible experts even recently to help support, you know, what we're going to do from a programming standpoint in that space, both with players and staff, but then also life skills and education. And we just have incredible people that are help leading these efforts that are maybe like, you know, overlooked because they're not the things that happen between the white lines, but they're so incredibly important for molding and growing 18, 19, even 15, 16 year olds in the international side of things. So everything that we can do to support our players from what people see when the cameras are on during game time to everything that people don't see kind of behind the scenes of setting up bank accounts and helping them with schoolwork and learning English. There's so many pieces of the puzzle, which again, I think is just a massive credit to the group that we have here that all kind of pull from the same side of the rope to hopefully get as many players as we can from the minor leagues to the big leagues and out on progressive.
Well, it is mid-January, Rob. And as James Harris said before, you and most in the front office do, the games, yes, they are in the spring and the summer, but especially player development, it is a year-round thing now. And I know that you have a lot going on, even now, before heading out to Goodyear and all that kind of good stuff. But thanks so much for the time, and congratulations on the new position. And we'll look forward to talking to you during the summer.
I appreciate it, Rosie. Looking forward to it. And thank you again for taking the time and having me on.
That's the Guardians' new Director of Player Development, Rob Serfolio. Stay tuned. More to come after this timeout on the Cleveland Clinic Guardians Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Flo from Progressive. If you love the sports like me, you get annoyed with your team or player. So Progressive's going to help take your mind off your team or that player for a moment. Instead of thinking about how they lost that thing recently, think about Progressive letting you compare our direct rates side by side with competitors to easily find the lowest option. Don't worry, your sports ball team or player will get them next time. Hope this distraction from Progressive about easily comparing rates was helpful to not think about that last game or match or season. I mean, even though I love sports ball.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Jim Rosenhaus back with you on Guardians Weekly for our final segment.
And as always, we remind you that you can hear our show each week on the Cleveland Clinic Guardians Radio Network. You can also listen to our program as a podcast in podcast form wherever you download your favorite podcast, or check it out online at cleguardians.com. That's going to do it for our show each week. Thanks so much for tuning in as always. And always, we thank Brian Motze for helping to put together our show back at Command Center. Until next week, this is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you that you've been listening to Guardians Weekly on the Cleveland Clinic Guardians Radio Network.
Guardians Weekly has been brought to you by Progressive, helping Guardians fans save hundreds on car insurance.